Welcome to HN Pod, the daily podcast where we dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Friday, May 15th, and this is episode number 396. We are covering yesterday's top stories from May 14th, 2026. We have a really fascinating lineup today that perfectly captures the current state of tech.
We really do. We are going to talk about a literal hardware teardown to stop a modern car from spying on its owner, a sobering message from MIT's president about the crisis in academic funding, the massive and slightly controversial rewrite of the Bun runtime into Rust, an absolutely wild project strapping a 600-watt desktop GPU to an M4 MacBook Air, and finally, Anthropic's new Claude for small business, which sparked a hilarious but very real debate about AI-generated corporate busy work.
Let us start with that hardware teardown. The top post yesterday was from a security researcher named Arkady Tettelman, titled "Removing the Modem and GPS from My 2024 RAV4 Hybrid."
This piece really struck a nerve. Arkady starts by pointing out that modern cars are just computers on wheels, covered in sensors, and they constantly phone home with your location, speed, video footage, and even eye tracking data. He references that infamous Mozilla privacy report from a few years ago that found car companies collect absurd data, even things like genetic information and sexual activity, and sell it to data brokers.
Right. And instead of relying on some buried opt-out menu that probably does not work anyway, Arkady decided to physically sever the connection. He took apart the dashboard of his new RAV4 to physically remove the data communication module, or DCM, and the built-in GPS antenna.
The technical walkthrough is great. He actually had to buy a $90 bypass kit just to keep the in-car microphone working for phone calls because Toyota wired the mic directly through the cellular modem. But the most interesting technical quirk was about Apple CarPlay.
Oh yeah, the Nevada bug. So if you remove the car's modem, Apple CarPlay gets confused. The iPhone uses its own GPS, but it also accepts a location signal from the car to improve accuracy. Without the modem, the car system freaks out and occasionally tells the phone that it is in the middle of Nevada. Arkady lives in San Francisco, so his navigation would just randomly teleport him across state lines. That is why he had to dig deeper and physically unplug the GPS antenna from the head unit, too, just to stop the car from feeding bad data to his phone.
And then there is the Bluetooth caveat, which caused a huge debate in the Hacker News comments. Arkady warned that even with the modem removed, if you connect your phone via Bluetooth, the car will secretly tether to your phone's internet connection and send all its telemetry back to Toyota anyway. He says you have to use a wired USB connection to prevent this.
The comments were super skeptical about that specific claim. A user named Code Zero asked how a car could possibly route data through a phone's internet without an explicit personal hotspot connection or a companion app. Another user, Fire, pointed out that Bluetooth tethering requires explicit permission on both iOS and Android.
But it opened up this much broader, almost existential debate about privacy. A user named Nurple pointed out that even if you block Toyota, the moment you plug in for CarPlay or Android Auto, Apple and Google are capturing your vehicle telemetry anyway.
Exactly. It led to this somewhat depressing thread where people were saying, look, you block the car, but your telecom tracks you, your credit card tracks you, public cameras track you. It really highlights the fatigue people are feeling. You can literally rip the dashboard out of your car and you are still being tracked by five other massive corporations.
It is a perfect example of why individual technical solutions do not scale for systemic privacy issues. But still, you have to respect the hacker ethos of just ripping the cellular modem out of your dashboard.
Absolutely. Moving on to our second story, we have a very different kind of systemic issue. This was a video transcript from MIT President Sally Kornbluth about research funding and the talent pipeline.
This was a surprisingly blunt message for a university president. She laid out some really grim numbers. Compared to last year, MIT has seen a 20% decline in campus research activity funded by federal awards. The number of new federal research awards is also down 20%.
And she explicitly called out the new 8% tax on endowment returns, which is hitting MIT and a few other peer schools really hard. But the human cost is the big story here. Because of this funding crunch, departments are terrified to admit new graduate students. Outside of the business school, MIT is projecting a 20% drop in new enrollments for next year. That is about 500 fewer graduate students.
Which means 500 brilliant people who will not get that education, and less manpower for basic discovery research. But the Hacker News comments took this in a completely different direction. Instead of just mourning the loss of funding, a lot of commenters use this to vent about the current state of academia.
Yeah, a user named J.R. Flow kicked it off by saying that 80% of the recent PhD grads they know are trying to leave academia, despite originally wanting to be professors. The median science PhD takes 6 years now, the pay is terrible, and the job prospects are bleak.
There was a wild anecdote from a user named Tasty Freeze about a friend who was a literal child prodigy, graduated MIT in 3 years, got a master's at Berkeley in 1 year, but then took 6 years to get a PhD at Stanford because his advisor just milked him for cheap labor, having him peer review her papers, write her drafts, and collect data that had nothing to do with his dissertation.
That sparked a massive debate about what a PhD actually is. A computer science professor jumped in to defend the long timeline, saying a PhD is an apprenticeship. It takes time to build a network, do internships, and mature your research taste. Graduating in 3 years actually hurts your career.
But the counterargument is the economics. Someone pointed out that MIT EECS PhD students make about $4,700 a month, which is okay, but another user who just finished a 7.5-year PhD said that while he only took home $40,000 a year, with tuition and overhead, he actually cost his advisor $150,000 a year.
It is a broken system. The advisors are stressed because students cost 150 grand, but the students are stressed because they are working 60-hour weeks for 40 grand and their professors are treating them like entry-level employees. It really makes you wonder if this funding crunch might actually force a necessary restructuring of how we handle graduate research.
It is definitely a bubble that feels like it is popping. Okay, let us pivot to some pure software engineering. Our third story is a massive milestone for the JavaScript ecosystem. The pull request to rewrite Bun in Rust has officially been merged.
This is huge. For context, Bun is the incredibly fast JavaScript runtime that was originally written in Zig. Jared Sumner, the creator of Bun, merged a single pull request with 6,755 commits. It ports the entire codebase from Zig to Rust.
Jared noted that it passes the entire pre-existing test suite, it fixes several long-standing memory leaks, the binary size actually shrunk by up to 8 megabytes, and performance is neutral to slightly faster. But the main reason for the rewrite was tooling. Jared said the lack of compiler-assisted tools for catching memory bugs in Zig was costing the team an enormous amount of debugging time.
Interestingly, they kept the exact same architecture. They are not even using async Rust, but the Hacker News comments were absolutely obsessed with the timeline and the methodology. Jared claimed the core of the rewrite took about a week, which sounds impossible for a codebase of this size.
Right, and a user named Sesam did some digging and found a very detailed instruction file in the repository that maps Zig idioms to Rust idioms. Plus, the Bun codebase already had internal smart pointers that mapped one-to-one with Rust. This led to a massive conspiracy theory in the comments that this rewrite was actually an AI-driven machine translation project.
And not just any AI project. The comments brought up the recent acquisition of Bun by Anthropic. People were speculating that this one-week rewrite was actually a proof of concept that the Bun team pitched to Anthropic during the acquisition deal, basically saying, look what we can do with your internal LLM tools.
Whether it was LLMs or just a very clever deterministic translation script, the community was divided. Some people called it a very expensive machine translation that wouldn't yield idiomatic Rust. Others pointed out that if you are rewriting a million lines of code, a bug-for-bug mechanical translation is exactly what you want for the first pass. You can refactor it later once the tests pass.
It is a fascinating case study. We have seen a lot of AI coding hype, but translating a high-performance runtime from Zig to Rust and actually merging it into main is a massive flex.
Speaking of massive flexes, our fourth story is completely ridiculous in the best way possible. The title is RTX 5090 and M4 MacBook Air. Can it game?
I love this so much. A blogger named Scott decided to take the most powerful, power-hungry desktop GPU on the market, the NVIDIA RTX 5090, which draws 600 watts of power, and plug it into an M4 MacBook Air, which has a 22-watt CPU.
He used a Thunderbolt 4 dock to adapt PCIe to USB-C, but the hardware is the easy part. The software is a nightmare because macOS does not have NVIDIA drivers for Apple Silicon. So Scott ran a 64-bit ARM Linux virtual machine on the Mac host and used PCIe pass-through to give the VM direct access to the GPU.
The technical write-up is incredible. He goes deep into mapping PCI base address registers and direct memory access. When he first tried to map the device memory directly, it literally crashed the macOS host kernel. The trackpad stopped clicking, the system hard locked, and the computer rebooted.
He ended up having to write a custom PCI driver kit driver, but the Hacker News comments were full of people venting about Apple's walled garden. A user named Matthew C. Carlson, who actually worked on the Apple Silicon Mac Pro, said he had been begging the Apple VM team for years to support GPU pass-through natively, but they never did it.
And the kicker is that Scott's project requires a special entitlement from Apple to run. It is the Driver Kit Transport PCI entitlement. You literally have to ask Apple for permission to compile and run your own driver on your own machine if it touches the PCIe bus.
Some commenters were hopeful Apple would rubber stamp it, but others pointed out that Apple has zero financial incentive to make it easy for Mac users to buy NVIDIA hardware instead of upgrading to a more expensive Mac with a bigger integrated GPU.
Still, Scott got it working. He posted a video playing Cyberpunk 2077 on a MacBook Air through a Linux VM. It is the ultimate hacker workaround to a corporate ecosystem problem.
It really is. And for our final story, we have another corporate announcement that led to a hilarious realization about modern work. Anthropic announced Claude for Small Business.
This is a new package that integrates Claude directly into the tools small businesses use every day. Intuit QuickBooks, PayPal, HubSpot, Canva, DocuSign. It has 15 agentic workflows for things like planning payroll, chasing invoices, and analyzing margins.
The idea makes total sense. Small businesses do not have the resources to hire huge administrative teams. So having an AI agent handle the month-end close or draft a marketing campaign in Canva is a huge value add. But the Hacker News comments completely derailed into a discussion about how AI is ruining corporate communication.
It was so funny. A user named CS Mastermind started by saying the killer app is going to be a UI that makes coding agents accessible to normal people. But then someone replied that when you give executives these tools, they just start vibe coding entire apps and get angry when the AI goes down because they do not actually know how to do the work anymore.
And then we got to the concept of the organizational self-imposed DOS attack, or as one user called it, intellectual denial of service.
Yes, people were complaining that their coworkers are using Claude to generate massive 10-page documents from a few bullet points of notes. They do not even read the output. They just send this wall of text to their colleagues to look productive.
And what does the colleague do? They don't have time to read 10 pages of AI fluff, so they feed the document back into their own AI to summarize it back into the original three bullet points.
It is absurd. We are burning massive amounts of compute and electricity to inflate a text message into a white paper, transmit it over the internet, and then compress it back into a text message.
One commenter mentioned seeing this in contract negotiations. Someone will ask Claude to generate a list of demands for a partnership. Claude spits out dozens of highly aggressive, verbose legal asks. The person sends it without reading it. And the other side is sitting there trying to negotiate, but they can't figure out what the actual business goals are because the sender never actually thought about it. They just let the AI hallucinate a maximalist negotiating position.
It is the ultimate distillation of where we are with AI right now. The technology is incredibly powerful. It can rewrite an entire runtime in a week. It can manage your payroll. It can write their code. But if you remove human curation and refinement, you just end up generating infinite entropy.
Adding is always easier than reducing to the essence. It is going to be fascinating to see if we develop new social norms around this, or if we are just doomed to send AI-generated essays back and forth forever.
I guess we will find out. That is all we have for today's episode of HN Pod.
Thanks for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and leave a review.
We will be back tomorrow with more of the top stories from Hacker News. See you then.